Case of the day, United States versus Peck. Mr. McGowan.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Andrew McGowan. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Sean Peck. Mr. Peck appeals the district court's ruling below that the complaint supporting application for a search warrant contained a probable cause. Our arguments in the brief indicate that we believe otherwise, and I will reaffirm those arguments here today. The probable cause is, of course, not a very difficult determination to make, and it doesn't take a lot of evidence, but it does take some evidence. And in this case, I believe that because they were relying completely on one person's information and didn't corroborate that person's information, that the information contained in the search warrant was the complaint was insufficient to establish probable cause.
Even if we agree with you on that, don't you have a big hurdle to get over with Leon? Because the police, at least according to the government, acted in good faith in relying on the warrant because he had a warrant signed by a judicial officer?
Your Honor, I did address that to some extent in my brief, although the district court didn't rule on that. One of the remedies that would be available to this court would be to remand this back to the district court for the court's determination. The court actually had two different chances to address Leon below and did not either time. And I believe that at this point, the argument that I've raised below and I've raised here, but there's also other evidence that I indicated below, that I raised below, that I didn't include in this particular brief. So I think it would be premature for this court to reach the conclusion that the Leon good faith exception would prevent this case from going back to the district court at this time.
Why didn't the court have probable cause?
Well, Your Honor, the complaint is based entirely on information provided by Denise Smith, the officer, by a woman by the name of Denise Smith, a confidential informant.
Now, what's wrong with that?
Well, the police didn't know anything about Denise Smith until she called that one day. In fact, she said she'd called several times. But the officer in charge, Officer James Root, talked to her that day. He drafted the complaint based on her statements over the phone, asked her to come in. She came in, and in front of a judge, who he called down to the police station, she signed the affidavit. Now, the reason that I believe that there's insufficient evidence to establish probable cause is because the confidential informant's veracity and reliability were not confirmed by any way. There's no corroboration. The officer took the information, didn't do anything to find out if anything that she was saying was true. And because he didn't corroborate it, they don't know anything about her when the judge takes her oath and says and watches her sign this. The information contained in it...
Yes, but she was present before the judge, wasn't she?
She was present before the judge. There were no questions...
And he saw her. He saw her.
Yes, he did.
He saw the affidavit.
Yes, he did.
Can't he make a credibility judgment, or does he have to give her 50 questions or something?
Your Honor, this court has previously said, in fact, in a recent case, that the probable cause hearing where a confidential informant appears before a judge, the judge is not required to ask the confidential informant any questions.
Right.
However, this court has also observed that when the court does not do that, that it leaves something lacking. It said if the
what
court
if the confidential informant isn't even there, then what happens?
Well, that would certainly make my argument much stronger. The fact is that I believe that the district court...
You mean it can't be then either?
I'm sorry,
Do you mean the court couldn't find it was reliable if confidential informer wasn't
I believe that the court could find it was reliable if the confidential informant wasn't there, but I would expect there to be some sort of corroboration, some sort of independent police activity to evaluate the person's statements to them at the very least. Even determine if the person is telling truth about her name and age, those sorts of things. But in any event, that didn't happen in this case, and this court has articulated a test with various factors to determine whether a confidential informant's reliability and veracity has been established, and I don't believe that the facts of this case meet that test.
Well, the court sees this woman, and he asks her the question, is all this information true and accurate to the best of your knowledge? He's read it all over.
That's part of the test.
Now, what else does he have to do?
The judge doesn't have to do anything. I believe that that would be sufficient to minimally present that part of the test to the court. That part's been met. But the other part of the test includes corroborating the confidential informant statements, which was not met in this case. The amount of detail, which is, I would submit, minimal, that she provided. She came, she saw, and this is what she saw, and that's it. But, you know, when you look at the complaint, it's got two paragraphs, two very short paragraphs that have her information. There are five sentences, one of which is a repetition of information that's provided in the other four sentences. They're numbered 2 and 4, even though they're sequentially there.
There's no requirement that she has to write a gospel, is there?
No, but there is some requirement that her statements be confirmed somehow, some sort of corroboration. And it can be through the court, it can be through the prosecutor, can be through the officer. There are all kinds of safeguards, but these minimal safeguards are required under the Constitution, the Fourth Amendment, to protect people from unreasonable searches and seizures and warrants that are not supported by probable cause. Now, these minimal protections don't require a perfect result. They don't require that the person's reliably be established beyond doubt, and that what happens is in fact applicable. But it does require some minimal investigation in the source of the information, and that wasn't provided in this case. And in fact, the facts of this case indicate that the confidential informant later stated that she lied. Now, I don't know that further investigation would have disclosed that at the time, but it's possible.
Why wouldn't this be acceptable under the good faith reliance, even if we relied on what you said?
Your Honor, I would submit
beyond case.
I would submit that the argument that I've made in the brief, which is it's a summary argument to some extent because the district court didn't rule on that, but it is required that officers have a good faith basis to believe that there's enough information in the affidavit to support the probable cause finding. And I've submitted that that's an argument that the good faith exception shouldn't apply. And I would reiterate that I expect that it's probably better that the district court make that evaluation.
I thought the Leon case language is that it was so lacking in the indicia of probable cause that no officer could have harbored an objective, reasonable belief to the contrary, that then the court must accept it. Isn't that the language in Leon?
That could be the language, Your Honor. I don't believe that there have certainly been cases that I've cited, in fact, where the good faith exception was not applied in a situation where there was no information. Now, both parties, both the judge referred at one point to this affidavit being a bare-bones affidavit. I would submit that the officer, who not only didn't do an investigation but affirmatively said he didn't want to, was not in a position to rely on the information contained in the warrant under these circumstances. Thank you, Your Honor. I'll keep the rest of my time for
all right. Thank you, Mr. McGowan. Mr. Cox?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Richard Cox. I'm an Assistant United States Attorney in the Central District of Illinois. I was responsible for the prosecution and the preparation of the government's brief on appeal. I will be the first to tell you that after 25 years as a federal prosecutor, this is not the greatest affidavit in support of a search warrant I've ever seen. Had I been personally involved in it, I can assure you there would have been more detail in it. So out of self-interest, if nothing else, that I wouldn't be standing before you arguing why this particular affidavit was sufficient when it certainly could have had more information. Be that as it may, that's not why we're here today, obviously. And what we're here to focus on is whether or not there was enough information in this affidavit to pass constitutionality under the Fourth Amendment. And, of course, we submit that there was. Police officers certainly could have done more investigative work. There's no doubt about that. But the police officer did have firsthand information from a person who claimed to have been personally present in the premises to be searched, who saw substances that she knew from her own experiences and that were represented to her by the defendant to be controlled substances. It was something that had been done recently. She knew the address. She described even the front door, the particular door to which, through which she was given entry by the defendant. And she met with the defendant. He displayed the drugs to her and represented them to be drugs. The officer could have done some additional work, but what he chose to do was to take that, prepare that information and take it to a circuit judge of Macon County, a judge, Judge Payne, who's been a judge for 13 years and said that he had reviewed in his 13 years 200 to 250 search warrant applications. So we're talking about a judge who certainly was experienced in reviewing affidavits in support of search warrants. He concluded, after placing the confidential informant who was present under oath and having her affirm that the information contained in the affidavit was true, didn't ask her any questions, but as Judge McCuskey pointed out, that simply could be a reflection that he didn't think any questions were necessary. He at least assured himself that the woman was willing to place herself under oath, swear to tell the truth, affirm the facts. He certainly confirmed that, in fact, there was a confidential informant, which in my experience sometimes has been an allegation that defendants have made, that the police did not have the confidential informant that they claimed to have had. That certainly was a concern.
And if he had lied, she could have been charged with lying under oath and giving us information.
Absolutely. It would have been subject to prosecution for perjury in the state court.
You mentioned that the police could have done more investigative work. They basically did no investigative work, right?
I would have to say that's pretty close to being... There were a couple of things, Your Honor, that the
police... Did they, like, verify her name or anything?
I think it's not in the affidavit, so obviously the judge didn't rely on it, but I know they did verify her name. She came in with another individual. They also verified that, in fact, the defendant existed because there was a criminal, or there was a record run to determine that there, were, in fact, was another complaint about drugs concerning that individual. Again, I think those are would really be pretty meaningless. But, I mean, he did do some things, but quite frankly, very little.
But whatever he did wasn't in the affidavit.
That's correct. Right.
So and he didn't file a separate affidavit.
No, he signed the same affidavit mm-hmm. that the confidential source signed, Your Honor.
That was her former boyfriend.
As it turned out, that we later learned, Your Honor, in fact, was not only her, it was, she had a child by Mr. Peck, the defendant. She was also pregnant at the time with another child by Mr. Peck. She subsequently has had that child since Mr. Peck has been convicted and sentenced.
And at the time, she was angry with him about diaper money or something?
What the agent testified at the hearing was, the statement made was that she was angry about him not providing diapers for the child, but also that he was dealing drugs and she thought he should be punished for it, both aspects. Now, I mean, clearly she had motives to do this, but in our line of work, quite frankly, most people who come to us have some motives, and it's a question of balancing and judging whether or not they're telling the truth, whether their motivations prohibit them from telling the truth or just a factor to be considered. So,
Mr. Cox, we said in Johnson it was a close case.
Yes, you did, Your Honor.
Now, are we going to lower the bar here, or would you say this is as close or...
Quite frankly, Your Honor, I think in this particular case we're a little stronger than in Johnson. They're almost identical. When you read the fact that the confidential informants assumed names were Pat Doe in both of these cases. But I think that there is, it's hard to quantify, but I do think that in this particular case there was a little bit more information from the confidential informant with regard to specificity. The court has no further questions. If you have any questions about Leon, I'll be happy to address those, but otherwise I'll...
So you're glad Leon exists, I would
say. Pardon me?
I said, I'm sure you're glad, Mr. Cox, that Leon exists.
Yes, I am, Your Honor. There's no doubt about that.
That's your backup.
Correct.
Mr. McGowan. Thank you, Mr. Cox.
Thank you.
Just very briefly, Your Honor. In reviewing Johnson for today, I just didn't notice many differences at all, except that the agent didn't do anything to confirm anything that the person was saying. There was no
corroboration. If there are any differences in Johnson, then that's not good. Mr. Cox's position, are you?
No, I'm not in Mr. Cox's position. I don't think you should lower the bar anyway. But I don't think this is lowering the bar. Because
in Johnson, what more was in Johnson than is here?
What more is? Well, the statement incriminated the person who was making the statement.
Right.
And I think that there was actually a lot more detail. And in Johnson, the person talked about his basis for the knowledge. I mean, he'd been dealing drugs before. He'd seen this person before. I think they were in the same gang. I may be confusing that with a different case. But I think that the details were more. And finally, the corroboration and the self-inculpatory statements are completely lacking. And that, I think that distinguishes this case from Johnson. And I think this is a much stronger case that there is no probable cause. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Our thanks to both counsel. Have both of you have a safe trip home, and the case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you.
All right.